I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics' viral tubing mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hello there. You're listening to Muses and Stuff. It's the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves. They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted and made no apologies.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Our guest this week is a super special one. It's like groupie Christmas. We have with us Agnes DeMarco.
Hello.
Hey, Agnes.
Hi, Agnes. Hey. Thank you
so much. Happy to be here with you.
Oh, we're so excited.
Yes, we're so excited for you to be here. So just to introduce Agnes, you, from what I know about you already by having a few conversations and by reading about you, I can tell right away that you are exactly what this podcast embodies and represents. Sweet, sexy, beautiful, powerful, and
fun. Yeah.
And ultimately inspiring.
Well, thank you very much. That's quite the handle, but that's
and
awesome.
If the DeMarco name sounds familiar to our listeners, it's because, you know, if people are listening to this podcast, music podcast, and they're a music fan, then they will no doubt know the name Mac DeMarco, and that is your son.
That is my son. That's correct. Yeah, I just came back from visiting him, actually, in Los Angeles.
Oh, so lucky. You get a little break from the Canadian winter that we're going through right now.
I ran away from Canadian winter this year. Well, actually, I ran away from Edmonton winter. I've been staying in Victoria with my cousin, but then I went down to see Mac for a couple of weeks in L.A., and it was fantastic.
Oh, good for you. And that's exactly what you should be doing, going to visit Mac in sunny, beautiful L.A., I presume?
Well, it was sunny for a few days. It was rainy too, but it didn't matter. We went to shows and we hung out. And for me, it was an opportunity just to hang out with my son when he wasn't on the road and playing shows and doing, you know, press interview after press interview. We did do a couple of them, but it was getting to see my son in his normal life. And that was such a nice thing for me because it's been years.
Yeah, he's always busy now, huh?
He tours like a maniac. He's been all over the world 5 or 6 times. And tomorrow they're heading to, he and Kira are heading to London for a week-long press tour. He's doing a couple of shows in Europe, and then he's coming back, and then the big season starts again. So it's a lot, you know? Yeah.
We're looking forward to seeing him when he's in Toronto next.
Excellent. I think he is playing a Toronto date. I don't know exactly when it is, but
actually, because they sold out immediately.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, within
10 minutes. My brother was talking about the show for weeks, and he had his finger on the button right when they went on sale, and he went, "Shanti, we're up in the balcony."
Oh my god, that's incredible. Yeah, well, you know, maybe he's going to have to start playing 2 shows in every town or 3. If that's what is happening, because you don't want to have to buy tickets from scalpers, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And he can sell them out now, so he should be doubling up for sure.
Yeah, I'll mention that to his manager.
Thanks, Agnes.
Plus, it would be probably more relaxing to be in one city for 2 days instead of one city and then another city the next. It's a pretty brutal touring schedule when he's on the road.
Absolutely, yeah, it's just take a little breather.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you guys are going. That is so awesome. I will tell him, well, I'm going to obviously tell his manager to tune into the podcast and check you guys out, and we'll see where it goes from there. But I think it'll be a fun show.
Oh, it sure will be. My brother has seen him so many times.
Oh, really?
My brother's a groupie for my son.
That's perfect. That word groupie has such a bad sort of rap. And, you know, really, it's not a bad word. It's just, I remember being crazy about so many bands when I was young. And I'm crazy about so many bands now. I think it's got a positive spin these days on that word.
I have my arms up in the hallelujah.
you said exactly what we're trying to do here is just bring it back to the positivity and what it's meant to be about and how it covers all fans, it's not just a sexual term.
No, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that was sort of a thing, I guess, in the 60s, 70s, maybe even the 80s. And I imagine that goes on still. But I think there's a whole movement of people who just love the new music and connect to it and are excited about it. There's a real excitement out there these days. So those are the people to me that feel like groupies.
I agree. And that's what we were saying the last time we spoke, that it was just, we feel such good things for 2017 in terms of the collective kind of conscious that everybody is feeling, and how we're really taking pride in our artists and our musicians, and we're really listening to them and putting faith in that
and owning our love and fandom for these people who inspire us.
It's very touching. And you know, I have to say that for the artists themselves, they do what they do. And the fact that they affect so many people, I think, is as surprising to them as it is to maybe the people that are affected, because they just do their thing. They are just creative. And the touching of other people's lives is a byproduct, and it's humbling, I think, for a lot of them.
Absolutely. It must be so special to hear your words come back at you and see it have meaning in other people's lives.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, I correspond with a lot of the kids that write in from the fan club, and I wish them all happy. I've been wishing kids happy birthday for years. It's just my thing. I just do it because I appreciate my son's fans so much, you know. And the things that they write to me about are that they had a bad year, they were depressed, they were whatever, you know, Brokenhearted, and one of Mac's songs pulled them through. And I just think that is so tremendous. To me, that's what it's all about.
That's so beautiful that you get to share in that and they tell you all
yeah.
stories.
Yeah, well, he's so busy, but I have the time. You know, I think at first when his career was just starting, he probably was in a lot more contact with fans than he is now. But I can still talk to people and, you know, on that sort of communication, the email level and stuff like that. I'm not too busy for that.
Well, speaking of you, we definitely want to get into you. We want to know about you and
my crazy life.
Yes,
absolutely.
But just before you get into that, what you were both talking about with the connection with people is growing up. My mom always told me, and her dad always told her, reach out and touch somebody's hand, make this world a better place if you can.
Aww. Yeah.
So we leave
out in the darkness. I think that was a Melanie song.
Yeah, that was my grandfather quoting Melanie.
Well, your grandfather must have been a hippie, was he?
My mom was definitely a hippie. That wasn't the one that my grandpa quoted. He used to always quote, I once complained that I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet. That was his. And then my mom's was the other one.
Yeah. Generational stuff. But you know what? It's, it's spreading the love is a good thing. And connecting with other people is what's happening now. And I really, it's reminiscent to me of what was happening in the 60s. So I'm on board with that. So me, well, okay. I was born in New York to two musician parents. My mom was an opera singer with the New York Met, and she was introduced to my father, who was a jazz musician that grew up in the village through her coach, Lila Edwards. Lila was a coach for the New York Met, Metropolitan Opera. And so we lived in Brooklyn. Mom and dad had three daughters in Brooklyn, and then she just got really homesick and wanted to be back in Edmonton where she grew up. And my dad was, he grew up in the village, so it was a really good opportunity for him to get out of the rat race of New York. And so they came back to Edmonton, and that's where I grew up. And Edmonton was, I don't know, maybe 60, 70,000 people when we came back. It was 1959 when I came back to Canada. And music became a huge part of my life when I was a little girl. I was a ballerina, from the time I was about four. And so there was classical music, there was jazz that we were exposed to, and then all of a sudden, the British invasion happened. The Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, and all of that stuff started pouring into everybody's lives, and it was so amazing. I loved the Beatles. I was a total Rolling Stones girl.
Okay, so who's your favorite Beatle? Were you a Paul girl? Were you
I loved the Beatles.
You're George? You a George girl?
Oh, you know, I would switch back and forth. I really love John Lennon.
Oh, yeah.
He's my favorite.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I really loved George. I loved the shoes he wore in the movie Help. They were so cool. He was just kind of quiet and sweet. But I loved Paul, too. I mean, Paul was just, and look at him. He's still out there, you know?
I know.
And I loved Ringo. I could do a very good imitation of Ringo, actually. But, you know, I did all the stuff teenagers did, lined up to watch A Hard Day's Night and went to the local venues that had sort of the underground music scene happening. There were so many bands that everybody was into. You know, there was a whole movement with like Buffalo Springfield and but the poppy stuff, Peter and Gordon, Chad and Jeremy, the Seekers, the Animals, the Stones. There was just this huge thing that happened, and it started to change kids. And then the hippie movement was in Edmonton. It was a small place. So there were about 2,000 hippies in Edmonton, and everybody knew each other. It was kind of amazing. And it was all centered around music. You know, we'd all go to the best places to hear local musicians play. We'd go to Zorba's, which was in the basement of a building on the university campus. We'd go downtown to the Hovel or the Forum or the Trocadero. And it was all the same kids that moved in all these circles listening to music. And music is what was connecting us and, you know, giving us sort of that sense of purpose. And at that time, the Vietnam War was on and people had, you know, they were standing up for what they believed and using music to as a platform for social change. And I think that in a very subtle way, that's still going on. I mean, we're not burning bras these days. We're not holding big demonstrations. Well, except for the Women's March was kind of a big demonstration. But there's a subtle sort of a reaching out that's going on that I think is really incredible at this time.
Absolutely. I think with the state of things at the moment politically, we'll probably see a lot more musicians using their platform to get a message out.
Well, I asked my brother, I said, okay, so Father John Misty, Josh Tillman, is he a voice? When he talks, I want to hear what he's talking about. I want to hear what he's saying. And I said, so he's going to have probably something new come out soon. Where is he going for the third? Do you think that he's just going to be having fun? Do you think it's going to be silly again? But my brother predicted, no, I think he might be going political.
I guess it depends on if he's going to use music that he's writing now or if that he's already written. Right?
Do you think, I was just looking at a schedule or the lineup for a couple of the festivals that we have going this summer. And on a festival lineup now, there are over 100 bands on a poster alone. Do you think that there's so many musicians and so many great artists and it's so accessible to get so many different kinds of music. We're not just limited to the radio now, like in, say, like the 1960s or just going to shows. Do you think that some voices get lost that way? Do you think that the message is as important or is as heard? I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, I think the opportunities are much better for musicians because they can get on the internet and they can get an audience before they're ever known. I mean, Mac had a huge internet audience and people in Edmonton still didn't know who he was, you know? Mm. I think it's a great opportunity for musicians, and I think that there are a lot of talented kids. Now, not everybody hits it with great success. It's still kind of like the stars have to line up for you. You have to have everything in the right place, and then if you have brilliant luck, it all works. But I think these festivals, I love these festivals with lots and lots and lots of artists because it exposes people to the huge variety of talent and the different styles of music that are out there. Festivals like Coachella, what festival are you referring to?
Way Home was just announced, and Ottawa Blues Fest.
And those festivals are usually held over a few days.
Yes.
Yeah, which I think is a great way to do things because you can have a variety of acts and people sort of get comfortable. You actually make friends at those festivals. It's not like buying two tickets for a concert where you sit in your seat and nothing happens. People dance at those festivals. They have a great time. There's food. Some of them you can have drinks at. I mean, it's just, I think it's a wonderful way to do things.
Yeah, much more interaction.
Much more interaction. And I think that if you are a little bit internet savvy, that you can get your music out there much more easily than before. some of the guys that came up in Edmonton, Ron Rault and his brother Lionel, they had a band back in the 60s, Willie and the Walkers. These guys were so good. And they put out their own single and all that, which was a huge deal at the time. They went to New York. They came back. But in order to do anything back then, there was no internet. There was really nothing. You had to tour in all the small towns in Alberta, or wherever you could get to, Alberta, BC, you know. So reaching a huge segment of the population was just not as easy as it is now. There are people who look up music online from all over the world. And so these tours that these kids do that are playing this music, they go everywhere. They don't just go across Canada or in their own province. They go through the States. They go to Europe. They go to Australia. They go to Singapore. They go to New Zealand. They go to Asia. They go pretty much everywhere. And so the exposure has made it like a global community of great music. It's a fabulous thing.
You're right.
Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah, and you can go places and already have an audience, even if you've never played there before, because...
That's right.
Yeah.
Very yeah, they already know your music, they already know your style, and they already want to see you play. So it's wonderful for these guys.
So I think we left off, and you were going to shows in Edmonton, right?
Did you ever want to perform? You did ballet.
Well, I did, actually. I did. I was in a couple of bands when I was 18. I was in the front man because you put a mic in front of me and it's like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, so we can tell. It's amazing.
I did some singing, but I didn't want a tour. I didn't want to go to every little small town in Alberta and do cover material for weddings and in bars. And it just seemed really lonely. Now, that maybe would have been different if the kind of opportunities that are available today are present. But I just, it wasn't for me. I wanted a different lifestyle. So, yeah, so I did some performing. And then I would jump up on stage with bands in, in the 80s. I was working in a hotel just before I moved to Los Angeles in the 80s. I was working in the Whistle Stop Lounge, and there was a big place called the People's Pub, and bands would come in, and they'd let me get on stage and sing a couple of numbers, and, you know, I'd get off my shift, go sing, and then I'd go.
That is so fabulous.
Yeah. But I'm from a showbiz family, so for me, that kind of stuff is just normal. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just what you do. And easy. It's different. I guess for other people, it's not the same thing. But when you grow up with musicians and you're around that kind of lifestyle all the time, it's just in your genes, I think.
I love that.
Yeah.
You could put a microphone in front of me and I can blah, blah, blah. I don't mind talking. I can give speeches. I can get up in front of crowds. But then you ask me to sing a song. And
I used to be a little shy about singing. I'm not anymore. But I think that's just because I'm older and I don't really care if anybody likes what I do or not. I'm just kind of past it. It's like, if you like me, that's great. And if you don't, that's cool.
That's the best way to live.
Fun. I'm trying to grow into that myself. And I think, mm-hmm. And then as soon as you put yourself out there publicly as well, we're realizing too, we're not everybody's cup of tea. But you know what? We're going to have fun. Mm-hmm. We're going to spread the fun. We're going to bring the party. We're going to get people excited. And then the people who aren't into it, then they can just go.
Listen to something else.
Exactly.
Exactly, and it's no reflection on you or what you do. And it takes a long time to come to that place in yourself. I think this generation of kids has a better sense of who they are. I really do. I don't know.
Been forced in a way, you know.
You think?
I'm feeling like a lot of the young people that I'm in contact with these days at 10 and 11 years old are much more aware of things that are going on around them in their lives, not just in their schools, but in the communities and in the world that...
And like what other people are going through?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it makes sense because there's nothing but information available. Mm-hmm. Anybody can Google anything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's always at your fingertips.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, yeah, there's no restriction on information. You can, I remember as a parent, when my kids were little, thinking, oh, well, I better not let them watch South Park. Well, you know, they were watching it at their friend's house. You know, I mean, they're just exposed to so much more. They may not get it, mm-hmm. but it's there. So it's probably a harder job for parents to keep things... Because I know a lot of information for kids, if they don't understand it, can be terrifying. So maybe a parent's job is now a little more hands-on.
The other day, I heard an 11-year-old say, I'm so socially conscious that I can't even enjoy movies anymore.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay.
These children are woke.
No kidding. That's scary.
But you know what?
So when do they get to be kids?
Exactly. So that now we're doing a lot of like not even preventative things, but we're doing like restorative measures where like they're needing the yoga and the meditation and the spiritual practice now. But then hopefully that's going to raise us a generation of more kind of emotionally and spiritually conscious youth as well. So. Because
is great. That's what the world needs, emotionally and spiritually more conscious people.
Yeah.
Because basically we're all the same, mm-hmm. you know, we're all made up of the same stuff and we need to learn to treat each other with respect and love.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, I'll get back to Edmonton. Well, I think Edmonton is a little cultural mecca on the prairies. It's got a great music scene. It has spawned so many great musicians, and there's still a lot going on. I mean, you can go out and hear live music every night of the week in Edmonton still.
Wow, I had no idea.
I had no idea either.
Yeah. Well, and I was telling you about Ron and Lionel Rault. I don't know mm-hmm. if you're familiar with Michael Rault. He's out of Toronto, I believe, and his sister Emily, that's Lionel's kids. And they were brought up in Edmonton, and they're both on the indie music scene as well. And Home Shake is also from Edmonton. Okay. Calvin Love is from Edmonton. There's a lot of guys that just did incredibly well. Alex Calder, he's out of Montreal, I think.
We've got such an incredible music scene in Canada. I was on I was a guest on a music podcast based out of the US, and mm-hmm. he was asking me, so who are your favorite bands? Who do you hang out with? And I was all just naming Canadian, and he had no idea what I was talking about. And I was like, you know what? The Canadian music scene is so big, and in a way it's so small too, because we all know each other. Yeah. If you're in it, everybody knows one another. Yeah. But it's rich, and it spans absolutely. From the West Coast to the East Coast, all the way. Like, there's some amazing things happening in Newfoundland, and there's some amazing things happening up in Iqaluit. So they have their first... record label, Akuluk Music.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's amazing.
That was started by a friend of mine in university when we were in a record co-op together. Now amazing. He's up in Nunavut with his wife and his family and his friends, and they've started their own record label.
That's incredible.
That's fantastic. That's good to hear. You know, it used to be that Canadian music didn't get recognized in Canada. You'd have to go to the States before anything would happen with your career, but it's not that way anymore, with the odd exception, like who was it, Backman Turner Overdrive and the Guess Who. Those guys, Ian Tyson, people like that from long ago, and Leonard Cohen and Joni Mitchell. I love her.
Oh, she's great.
She's one of my heroes.
Yeah, me too. I think she was, that was one of the it was one of the first albums I ever bought.
Every song on that album is just
It's amazing. Yeah. She was an incredible, well, she still is, an incredible artist, an incredible painter, a brave woman. You know, there were so many women that I thought were so stellar in rock and roll. Janis Joplin, I just loved her. She was just out there being herself.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's tragic that she died so young, but she was a brave gal. She had a lot of stuff to overcome, and she just sang like nobody else.
My father, he was like a massive Janis Joplin fan, and he has this story about going to see her, and he managed to get backstage, and he was like so excited to finally go up to her, and she was standing at the side of the stage just out of view from the audience, and he started to walk up toward her, and he noticed that she was like crying all alone. And he didn't know if he should like go up or not, and he ended up not going because he just felt like he was gonna like intrude on this personal moment. But every time he tells that story, he gets like all misty eyed, and like I can tell he wants to go back and like give her a hug. And
yeah, exactly. That's what the visual I had was. He should have just gone up and put his arms around her. Because you know what? When you're crying, that's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You don't need anybody to fix it. You just need somebody to hold you.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, no, she was an incredible performer. And, and Joni. I just love Joni Mitchell. But I'm trying to think of who else had big influence. Well, like I say, I was a Rolling Stones girl. I had every album of theirs. I loved the first rock concert I ever went to in Edmonton. We used to have amazing concerts in Edmonton too. The first one I went to in grade seven or eight was The Cream.
Oh,
can you believe that?
Yeah,
I know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, The Cream.
No age restrictions or anything. You could just go.
Yeah. It was at the sales pavilion, you know, where they used to auction off cattle. I went on the bus, you know, because the cute guy in school told me I should go. So I did. And it was amazing, just absolutely amazing. And then they had a place in Edmonton called the Kinsman Fieldhouse. It's now a big gym. But they used to bring bands in. I saw the Byrds open for Led Zeppelin there.
Oh, my God.
I know. Frank Zappa and the Mothers.
Oh.
And, yeah, the Turtles, Flo and Eddie, the Turtles were there. Lots of local, there were bands that would come up from Vancouver, like Black Snake. And I saw Three Dog Night at the Sales Pavilion. MASH McCann was a band out of Toronto, too, that was always touring back and forth and back and forth. And it was, it was quite the time. I mean, there were always shows going on, and kids did.
I did wonder, you know, if you weren't in L.A. in the 60s and 70s, and you were going to shows, then, like, were these big music shows still happening in Canada? Were they happening out in the prairies?
I wouldn't have thought in Edmonton, like, that you actually had such a rich scene back then. That's amazing.
Because you'd never heard about it.
It was fantastic. It was really good. We had a promoter named Benny Benjamin, and he would bring all the big acts up. I mean, they could get them in Vancouver. He made sure they made it all the way to Edmonton.
Good.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the scene has changed now. We get good names in Edmonton. I saw Prince not too long ago.
Yeah, you did.
And I saw Bob Dylan last time he was through town, and the Stones. And, you know, so, I mean, the big names come through all the time.
Awesome.
It's a different scene.
Yeah, for sure.
When did you move from Edmonton to L.A.?
In the early 80s, my dad, this is an interesting story. You can actually Google Hank DeMarco, One Arm Sax. And it's the story of my dad. He was a sax player who was diagnosed with cancer in his wrist. So he went in to get it removed, and he also had cancer in one kidney. Oh. Well, when he woke up, he was missing his arm from the elbow down, arm. And he was left-handed and a sax player. He was very depressed, and there were some guys doing some breakthrough work at the University of Alberta, and they developed the first sort of bionics to help him play saxophone. He had this cup that you fit over the over the stump that had electrodes, and then it fed down into a lunchbox, and then more wires came up, and so depending on which electrode he pressed with his stump, it would depress the keys on the sax. Yeah, so anyway, there was a program called That's Incredible at the time, and they heard about him, and they came up and filmed him. They actually filmed him in my old apartment. Part of it. So he, that gave him his actor's card, and then he moved to LA. And so I went down to hang out with him because I was going through a divorce, and I almost didn't get back into Canada because I didn't realize that you could only be gone for 6 months. So I stayed a year and a half. So that was, yeah. But it was an incredible thing. He got to be an extra in lots of movies when he was down there, and he did some playing. And he died in 85 from cancer. It did come back, but he had some incredible experiences for the last maybe five or six years of his life. So
that's, it was good that he was able to continue his passion.
Exactly. So that was kind of amazing. So that's why I moved to LA. And that was like, I guess, 1981, 82, something like that.
Did you get into the music scene while you were there?
Not so much. I went to a few things that Dad was doing. And it was just, I did go to some clubs, the Palomino Club, and listen to bands, but I wasn't totally in the scene. I had to work. He moved when I got there, then after not too long after, he moved to San Ysidro, and then my sister came down to live with me, and I was basically just working and staying in my own little neighborhood, going out to the beach once in a while. We went to clubs and stuff, but I wasn't into it the way I was in Edmonton.
Yeah, sometimes you just need a little break, too.
Yeah. Well, I was running away from a bad marriage, so I just was kind of crazy. So I just needed to go somewhere else.
Go to the beach. Just get some sun and relax.
Exactly.
Get some sun, exactly. Beach, some perspective. Awesome.
Yeah, that's right. And then I came back to Canada and pretty much stayed in Edmonton after that until I met Mac and Hank's father, and then I lived in B.C. for a while, because Mac was born in B.C. He was born on Vancouver Island in a city called Duncan. And we stayed here a year and a half, and then I went back to Edmonton again because I needed some support raising a family. He was not a very good, not a responsible guy. He had some addiction issues, so.
So then you just needed to go and have some family support or be alone? And then kind of growing up, because you grew up in a musical household, you must have had music playing all of the time. I mean, I can just imagine that. Mm-hmm. Did you have a specific room in your house where...
Every room was musical?
Our kitchen was our dancing and our music room.
Well, actually, there was an upstairs room that we used to have dance parties in when the boys were little. but I also had stuff going on in the living room and the kitchen. So it was just kind of a household thing. And we listened to all kinds of stuff. I went through a bit of a country phase in the 90s that my children have almost forgiven me for, but not quite. So, yeah.
I feel like that's a necessity when you live in Edmonton for a while.
Well, no, it was just, I was a soccer mom and they all liked country music, so I checked it out. And we'd go to the country bars and they played that music, so I got into it, you know.
I lived in Edmonton for 3 years growing up, and you just described, like, my mother perfectly. Definitely the soccer mom, definitely going to the country clubs and...
The jamboree.
Yeah, doing the line dancing and...
Oh, God. Yeah, I tried that for a little bit of time, and then, I have an appreciation for any kind of music, so it was fine with me, but the boys didn't like it that much. But then once they got, my mom gave them lessons at Alberta College, because she was a teacher there for many, many years, a vocal teacher. And so she got Mac into guitar and Hank into drums, and you know, that's sort of where Mac's career took off. Like, he just picked up the instrument and he was a natural. And Hank was really good on drums, but his passion was ballet, which he didn't even discover until high school. So,
like you are growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I love too. And it didn't even dawn on me that he would go for that. But yeah, he was in West Side Story.
Wow.
In high school. And his teacher recognized something in him. So he went to 2 years of ballet school in Edmonton and then 2 years of school with Alberta Ballet in Calgary. And now he's dancing with Nevada Ballet Theatre in Las Vegas. And I'm going down to see him in Peter Pan.
Oh, Agnes, that's so fantastic.
I know. Yeah, so that's in May. And then we're both flying back to Edmonton together. So, yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
There's nothing like the relationship between sons and their mother. Like, I have two brothers, and I just see them, like, with my mom as well, and the relationship and just the love that she has for them. And it really takes a strong, smart, woman to raise really great boys. And so, like, wow.
Well, and, you know, here's the thing. Kids don't come with instructions. I didn't know if I was doing anything right. So, you know, because you don't know. You read what's popular at the time, you listen to your friends, and you go with your gut.
Mm. Not everything is right for every child.
Yeah, yeah. And with boys, being a single parent, by the time they're in their mid-teens, there's not really, you can't leverage control over somebody that's 16 years old and a foot taller than you are. It just doesn't work out so well.
Right.
So you have to just hope that what I said to my kids was, you guys are smart and you're loving and I trust you. So go out there, and if you make a wrong decision and you get in trouble, phone me because I'm right here. And they were good. Like, they didn't get into anything too terrible. They just went out and had fun and met people and pursued what they pursued. So I was very lucky.
Oh, that's wonderful. My mom said similar stuff like that to us, and she was always there for us. We never had to lie. She knew we were good kids, and we were going to try stuff. So just, like, let her know so that we can be safe. You know, our house at home, our door was never locked. I would wake up sometimes, and my brother's friends would be sleeping on my couch downstairs, and my brothers wouldn't be home. But they knew that they needed a place to crash. You know what I mean?
A safe house.
Yeah, my house was like that too. It was, well, Hank was a very solitary guy. He had like three friends. Mac traveled in a pack. He's a pack animal. He always had an entourage, and everybody was always welcome. It didn't matter to me. They could, eat, sleep over, do whatever you're going to do. I'd rather know where you are and know you're safe.
Exactly. And they appreciated that too. And yeah, the kids, and I know that the kids whose parents at home were yelling all the time or anything, they'd come to our house and they'd chat with my mom, and they'd feel like that they had another mother. And that's so important to be, a mother too, and a friend, and all of this too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had my kids late. I mean, I was 36 and 39. So really, there was quite a big difference. It wasn't like one or two generations, it was several. But it worked out for me. I was just calmer, and it was great. And we are friends, and I'm still friends with their friends. Sometimes when kids come to Edmonton from Montreal or from Toronto or whatever, they'll come and knock on the door just to say hi, which I think is so wonderful.
I love that.
That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty great. I've had some great opportunities too, to get to know what's going on, sort of in the global community of music, because when Mac went to Australia in 2015, the guys that, run the Laneway Festival got a hold of me. Jerome and Danny Rogers, Jerome Barrazio and Danny Rogers, and these guys are brilliant. They started this festival in an alleyway in Melbourne, and now it's all over Australia. It's in Singapore. I mean, it's huge, multi-city, and they fly all these people in, and they go from city to city to city, you know, playing these festivals. And so I got to MC.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It was such a blast. I had the best time. And that festival runs like a well-oiled machine. They move from city to city. All these musicians fly from city to city. They have food. There's no violence. There's no trouble. It's just an incredible thing that these guys do. And so I got to meet all kinds of musicians from the United States, from Canada. One guy that's out there right now, his name is Caribou. Are you guys familiar with Caribou? He's kind of like a synth type player. He used to be called Manitoba.
Yeah, when you're saying no, I'm saying yes.
Okay. Yeah. So he was one of the guys that was on that tour, but there were lots of Australians and some of the guys that, like Mac, would do sideshows. So I got to meet some local groups as well.
Oh, they're and fine, it was those guys.
Oh, it was amazing. It was just amazing. You know, sometimes check it out. Google the Laneway Festival and check out some of the musicians that are on those bills. It's stunning.
Because we're talking about, you know, the Canadian musicians are really, you know, before that they relied on going to the States or it was just the American mm-hmm. bands. And then we think of it, you know what, there's Australian musicians making it happen, you
yeah.
know?
Oh, yeah, and from London. And what's cool about the way the world works now and how all these festivals are is that it brings all the musicians from other countries together, and they travel together and get to know each other. I was just in LA with Mac, and there were kids there that I had met in New York that were musicians from New York that were in LA. There was a guy over there from London. There was a girl who was from Paris. You know, there were people that I had seen on the tour in Australia. So these musicians now move globally mm-hmm. and just go where the music is best, where they can produce their videos and get their music known and tour. And it's incredible. It's just incredible. I was so surprised to see all these faces from Australia and New York in LA. But I guess that's the way it works now. So it's no longer, it's no longer just about Canadian music. Mm-hmm. It's about global music because it's a huge community now mm-hmm. with a voice, you know?
So you've been to a lot of shows like all over Canada and Australia and the States. Do you notice a difference in the audience or like the fans or is that also like a universal same?
You know what? I watched the kids at Laneway, and I watched the kids in Edmonton at, what's it called, Union Square, the last time Mac played. And I've watched people in some of the smaller clubs, and it's all the same. Even at the Blues Festival in Edmonton, which is an older crowd, mm-hmm. it's the same thing. People just respond positively. You know, the kids in Australia were the same as the kids in Edmonton.
That's my favorite. When you go to a concert and you're standing beside people and they really just say, hey, like nice to see you. We're having a great time. Mm-hmm. You know, not, and it's not that attitude of I've been standing here for 3 hours, so you can't stand beside me. Because I've been to shows where I've never pushed anybody out of the way or anything, but I found myself maybe a little bit closer to the front or something. And just mm-hmm. the fact that I had just arrived there really pissed off some people. And they were like, well, we were standing here for 3 hours. And I don't like that kind of attitude when it comes to shows and to music. As long as everybody has enough room to stand
yeah,
and
to
dance
just,
then
yeah.
let's all be
It should
one.
Be a positive experience
yeah.
for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and part of the problem is that there's, like you say, with the ticket sales selling out boom like that,
right.
there maybe needs to be a couple of shows because it's we want to get rid of the scalping and we want everybody to be able to go to these things. We want them affordable and safe. And Matt yes. does a lot of shows that are all ages mm-hmm. because a lot of his fans are really young, you know? So it would be awful if you were 15 and had to wait till you were 18 to go see somebody that you idolized play a show. That would just be heartbreaking. So I like the idea that there's all-age shows, that there's multiple kinds of venues that you can go to, and that there's a sense of inclusive participation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's all about too, is and then getting in a room with that many people and then just feeling that buzz and that hum and that everybody's energies just kind of coming together.
Speaking of participation, when did you start interacting with fans on Twitter and other social outlets?
Well, what started, I guess when Max started getting some internet fame, his fans would Facebook me and ask to be my friend. And so I would say, oh, you love Max music? Great, so do I. Sure, I'll be your friend. And then and that just sort of snowballed, because then I would always wish them happy birthday. And then one time Mac was in Portugal playing a show and there were kids, it was my birthday, and there were kids holding up signs that said, happy birthday, Agnes. He phoned me. These kids are all holding up these signs that says, happy birthday to you. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. So it just kind of started just because they reached out to me and I responded. And then it's just gone on from there. And I guess, now I do stuff with the fan club, and I interact with Mac's manager quite a bit. And as far as Laneway, that came at me out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that, and it wasn't Mac that suggested it. It was these guys from Laneway, because I guess Mac's manager was saying, oh, yeah, Mac's mom does blah, 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 and she crowd surfed in New York, and it was really fun.
Yes.
I've never done that before, but
I've never done it before.
I never have. It's fun. Either.
I'm gonna do it. Be like, you've inspired me.
This is our it was, yeah.
Well, I was 61 at the time, and I had artificial hips just done not so long before that. But so if I can do it, guess what? You can do it. Yeah.
We just video Skyped, and if you told me that you were in your early 50s, I would have been. But. Hello.
I'm 63.
No way.
I am. Yeah, I had my kids late. But I've got, you know, a youthful spirit, I guess.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
And I think you're always going to have that. And I think it's that spirit and that energy and the love and the fun that's really been attracting people to you. And I'm so happy that we found you.
Me too. Me too. I think this podcast is a great idea. And like I say, I will be more than happy to participate on any level you want me to. And yeah.
We're going to come back and we'll check in with you.
Yeah, we definitely.
And we'll see, what kind of concerts you've been to and who you're listening to. And you can be a rock and roll journalist with us.
That sounds amazing.
Podcaster.
Just add that to your mini hats.
Okay. I'll say that I didn't tell a whole lot of people that that we were doing this with you because I wanted it to be a surprise. And but I did tell a few people. I went to a party on Friday night for my friend's record label. They were putting it on at this swanky kind of place I'd never been before. And I had such a tough week that I bought and drank a $20 martini in like 3.5 minutes. So at one point, my body and my brain were like, peace. They just took a vacation from each other. But I forget who it was that I was talking to, but I told them about this and that we were going to be speaking soon. And they came at me with all these questions. Oh, what about when Max sings this line? Ask her what she thinks about this line here. And what about this one and this one and this one? And I couldn't remember it if my life depended on it at this point.
But that's the beauty of a $20 martini.
That is the beauty of
a $20 martini. His music affects me profoundly. The first time I heard Blue Boy, I wept.
Aww.
And it wasn't even about himself. It was about, Mac writes about whatever's happening in his world to his friends. It's not always about himself, mm-hmm. but it's about what he's experiencing in his life mm-hmm. and through his friends and in the scene. So, it's, if there's a line that somebody wants to ask me about, they're welcome to, because I wouldn't hold back.
Oh, that's awesome. I know my brother had lost, but it's like, you know what? I don't think we'll get into that kind of specific stuff. However, like now that we're starting to get listener emails and questions and things like that, and people are really starting to interact as well, then we can open that up and we can say if there's anything that you would like to know about Agnes, about Hank, about the music scene, that
well,
we can call
you know the song Cheryl? Yeah. That's about his grandma.
Aww.
That's about my mom.
Aww.
I know.
With Cheryl and you and his badass manager and Kira, he seems to be surrounded by some pretty
badass women.
Influential badass women.
Yeah, that guy doesn't stand a chance. No, we all love him. We all encourage him. He's got a brilliant talent, and he's a loving, wonderful guy. So, yeah, he's had, well, and when he was growing up, I have two sisters, and that's who was around, and my mom. So, you know, he's always been surrounded by a tribe of women. Mm. Yeah, it's not a bad way to go.
It's not, and he really is a talent, and yeah. I've been a fan of him ever since I've known about him. I know that my family really likes him as well, all of our friends. And truly, I think that he is one of the biggest, baddest, best musicians, artists, voices of our generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really rocketed. He's opened the doors for people too, and that's what I love about Mac too, is that like the guy that's playing keyboards with him, John Lent. Mm-hmm. John Lent is from Edmonton. They were friends as teenagers.
Oh, I love when that.
So Mac looks after his homeboys, you know, mm-hmm. and gives them I just think that's so sweet. Anyway,
it's probably he's positive for him too to like keep him grounded and remember, you know, it's about family and friends and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Positive.
He's not he's not an egomaniac. Like he's quite he recognizes that he's had very good success, but he doesn't count on it being a forever thing, and he's quite humble.
I feel like you can tell. You can tell when you see him, you know, singing and dancing and just
yeah,
he's
being
just
a goof.
Like having a blast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if they all could just be like that.
Well, variety is the spice, you know?
See, that's why you're so wise. You're going to be our wise rock and roll oracle.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. Oh, thank
you. Who knew my life would end up that I'd be a rock and roll oracle? That is just so funny. But it kind of makes sense in a way. So there you go.
Yeah, you were raised, it's from birth.
And Agnes, yeah, it's just, now you have groupies.
Yes. That's okay. Well, I do, which
you
is kind
totally
of funny.
Do.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll be nice to my groupies.
You've got fans for sure. And
they love you.
Aww.
Just like
well,
you
I
do.
Love them too. I mean, these people really get to my heart because they tell me stuff that's so personal and ask me questions about. They ask me for advice on their lives, some of these kids, and I find that really touching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, Oracle.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I'd have to be the dancing Oracle, because I'm that chick at every concert and every show that's the first one up on the dance floor.
Me too.
That's us. Absolutely.
Okay, perfect.
Always
all
have
right.
been, always will be. You have to be the one that starts it, that like,
right.
that gives the message to other people that it's okay.
Yeah,
you
come
know?
Out, the water's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you sure you're not my kids?
We might be.
Okay, then. Great.
Yeah, you got to come to Toronto sometime and go dancing with us.
And
I would love to.
And
I would absolutely
we'll have to
love
check
to.
Out this music scene in Edmonton as well, because we definitely want to take this podcast on the road. We want to be meeting our dolls and our, I just heard this word for the first time, crone.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that word?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the very wise, you know, like woman that we all look up to, that is just so close, it's just just divine. She's divine. And so I'm really looking forward to getting to know everybody more and having some times together and just really bringing together, going dancing, going to see some music, and just...
That would be so fabulous. And there's a woman I have to introduce you to in Edmonton that is stellar as well. Sandra Sparunas has been writing on these. As a matter of fact, I'm going to text her and tell her that maybe you guys need to talk to her too. She's unreal.
That would be awesome. So wonderful. Any kind of, we have to follow these spiritual guidance. We'll definitely
talk to her. And we love like connecting with other strong, amazing women who are, you know, going out there and living life and having fun.
And it's about damn time that I explored the west coast of Canada.
That's right. That's right. Well, you're welcome anytime.
Thank you, Agnes.
And you're definitely a muse to us, Agnes.
Yep.
No, thanks. You guys, I feel kind of, I'm just an old gal that loves music, essentially, and loves people. So that's pretty much it.
Amen, sister. Well, Agnes, before we say goodbye, can you tell the people who are just either hearing from you for the first time or who now definitely want to check you out, where can they find you online?
I am on Facebook, Agnes DeMarco. I am on Twitter.
Just Agnes
DeMarco. I'm also on... Yeah, Agnes DeMarco. You can also write to me if you want to join Max Fan Club. I'm the one who corresponds with the kids on Max Fan Club. So you can join for free or you can pay to be a disciple. So either way, up to you. And that would be agnes@mac-demarco.com.
Fantastic. Okay. We will put all of those up in the show notes and in the links. Hey,
perfect.
Thank you so much, Agnes. This has just been the best conversation.
Yeah.
It's been my pleasure. You guys are really fun, and I just look forward to talking to you again. So I will make notes on some of the stuff that I'm seeing around Western Canada, and then I'll be ready to give you some good, solid information.
Oh, wonderful.
Perfect. That's awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Until next time.
Until next time, rock on, ladies.
Rock on, Agnes. Okay.
Bye.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. You can find us, Muses and Stuff Podcast. We have Twitter now.
Yes, we do.
Because I was like, I'm not doing it. And Lynx was like, I will do it. Yes. So we're at Shanti and Lynx. But if you just look up Muses and Stuff on Twitter, you'll find us. And of course on Facebook, Muses and Stuff Podcast, Instagram, Muses and Stuff Podcast. And feel free to send us an email if you have a groupie story of your own or any questions or any kind words to share, musesandstuff@gmail.com. Until next week, everybody, thank you so much and take care.
Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.